This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Chris Abbott, CEO of Pivot Bio. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced feed ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Pivot Bio's Chris Abbott next. America's 11,000 sugar beet and sugarcane farmers count on a strong U.S. sugar policy to keep American consumers supplied with an essential ingredient. Better yet, it's designed to cost taxpayers nothing. These farmers support more than 151,000 jobs throughout the sugar supply chain in both urban and rural communities. They contribute over $23 billion to the economy each year and help keep it sweet in America. Learn how the Farm Bill supports sugar crop farmers and workers at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Many of the advancements in agriculture technology have been in developing seed traits to resist pests and disease as well as herbicide resistance. New horizons in ag research and product development are focused on what happens in the soil and the relationship between the plant and microbes in the soil. Chris Abbott says Pivot Bio began 15 years ago and have been commercial for the last 5 years. Abbott says their researchers are developing microbes that naturally feed plants and lessen the need for synthetic fertilizers.
But the whole premise, even, 15 years ago and even today, is how do you use modern gene editing tools to fix nitrogen with microbes? Because you can't do it consistently enough or at a high enough rate with a wild type. You've got to use gene editing. And so the premise 15 years ago, which holds today, is by using modern gene editing with a microbe, we can do that. And right now we do it about 1,000 times more fixed and excreted nitrogen than the microbes would wild type. And certainly can do it much more consistently because you can wire them to do it in essentially, as I say, an always-on feature so long as the corn plant or the cotton plant or the wheat plant are signaling to it. And so it's what drove us then when Carson and Alvin started the business, and it's what, some of the foundational drivers of what propels us forward today almost 15 years later.
What are the economics of production agriculture that make this area of science viable to invest in?
We've done amazing work as an industry in the three pillars, as I would call it, from an ag inputs perspective. You've got the seed trait and genetics, you've got crop protection and biologics, and you have fertilizer. And we've seen the amazing run-up of businesses created, obviously Monsanto and others in the genetic space, and in breeding and in actually working on plants. We've seen small molecule chemistry, the transition and the rise of biologics and CP. And then you have fertilizer, which is an amazing $200 billion global industry. It's the second biggest area of spend that a farmer, a row crop farmer, makes outside of seed. And it's the third leg of the stool that needs to be impacted by technology in a good way. And so in our business, we think about ourselves. We've had to go through a number of learnings, as you can imagine, as a growth business from starting the business to where we are today. But I say, look, we think about ourselves as a fertilizer company. Our partners are fertilizer companies. Our growers buy from us thinking about it as a new source of nitrogen as a fertilizer. Our strategic partners and distribution partners sell it as a new novel, higher performing fertilizer. And so when you think about investing in the space, and as we think about investing our own capital and our time and our human capital, you really have to think through how do I position myself in this space to help all of my partners, my stakeholders, which to us start with the grower, but it doesn't end there. We've got distribution partners, seed companies, fert companies. We treat them all like partners and customers. And you need to know how you can serve those folks, because you can't serve one and not the others. And my view is you have to take a partnership-oriented approach in our industry. So that's how we think about it.
Change our perspective about soil. What is it?
Yep.
And what's the relationship between the microbe and the seed?
I think many of us as consumers have seen and learned things in our own lives, right? There's stories about, you know, you have millions of bacteria or organisms that live on your skin. Or some people talk about the gut microbiome, right? I have all these microbes and all these living organisms that help me digest food, and I, you know, take probiotics or prebiotics, and it's baked into my nutrition because I understand all the living organisms in the world and how they all work together. The soil is no different. The soil is a couple things. It's a supply, a population of microbes. There's trillions of them that live in the soil. They live symbiotically to each other, but also other organisms, right? You think about rootworm. You think about other pests. You think about good earthworms, right, that are helping soil. There's so much going on in the soil, and that's all impacting that plant. And plants are also smart. They're living organisms. It's something that we see in our business, right, because our microbes are naturally occurring in that soil. They naturally live on the root system of, and we'll use corn as an example, of a corn plant. We're in corn, wheat, and cotton and other cereals, but we'll stick to corn. When that corn plant emerges and starts growing and going through its photosynthetic process, what happens is it's sending signal through the root exudates, or sugar and fuel through the root exudate system, to feed its little army of workers underground, right? So when you think about building soil health, when you think about building water holding capacity and organic matter of those soils, it's all for good reason, because it's supplying nutrients, it's supplying water to that corn plant, and in return, the corn plant is sending signal down there. So you get this symbiotic relationship of all the things happening in the soil and all the things that the plant needs, and we sit, kind of visualize this, we sit right in the middle of that. We've got microbes that are literally attached to the root system, and they're fixing nitrogen through producing an enzyme called nitrogenase. So they're converting that nitrogen in the atmosphere, so to speak, to ammonia for the plant, and it creates a spoon fed. So as that plant is secreting sugar and sending signal that it needs more nutrients, it's sending the signal to the microbe. And those microbes click on when that plant starts growing, and it goes all the way through tassel, and they're spoon feeding it nitrogen. So it's a really cool symbiotic approach. And that happens in a whole host of different functions, not just nitrogen.
You are selling a gene-edited living organism. When I think about gene editing, yep. I think about animals, I think about plants. It falls into a new area of science. How do you edit these microbes to achieve the mm-hmm. purpose that you're looking for?
Yeah, it's awesome, because we as an industry in ag now are taking technology that's not necessarily ag, right? You think you've mentioned plants, animals, humans, and biologics, and in drug discovery, solving some of our worst disease, cancer, that's all around novel life science technology. We take those technologies, and what we do are really two critical things when we think about our gene editing and hundreds of patents in our IP portfolio. Number one, we know microbes have the ability to fix nitrogen. However, because they're a living organism, some things we just talked about, when there's synthetic nitrogen or nitrate in that soil, they downregulate that function. It's energy intensive to produce, to fix nitrogen, and so they take that energy and they go do something else. They don't need to. It's already abundant in the soil. So they have that sense and react ability. What we do, as I say, is we blind them to self-awareness. They don't care if there's nitrate in that soil. Their job is to biologically produce it and spoon feed it to the plant on the root system. You have to do that so that you get consistent performance. Performance of our microbes, if it went up and down with soil nitrate levels, we would never be able to deliver a customer's successful experience consistently. So you've got to make sure, as I've said earlier, it's an always-on effect. Reading that plant and continuing to know that's my host plant and I'm going to fix it nitrogen. The second thing, though, you have to do is that microbe, because it is energy efficient, doesn't naturally fix enough to be commercially viable. Some of the wild type strains that exist in the world, they're marginal effect at best on the plant. We've seen that in various strains and in products both in North America and South America. What we've been able to do is amplify that fixation. We use gene editing to channel energy. Think about channeling your metabolic energy, for example, as a human, to do something. And in this case, it's nitrogen fixation. Our microbes, we measure this in a number of different ways, but fix and excrete about 1,000 times more nitrogen than they would wild type. So now you have two things that you can use modern life science tools for. One, make the microbe fix nitrogen more consistently, and then make it do it at a much higher rate. Now you have a product. Our products, you know, we'll stick with the corn example I started with here, called Proven. What we can do now is we can continue to increase that 1,000 number that I gave you in terms of fixation rate, continue to take that higher, but then you can also add more microbes. Think about adding more factories. So we're not just producing nitrogen V6 to tassel, which is really where we get a bulk of our nitrogen fixed and excreted with the current product, but maybe that's in the R stages or out through grain fill. And so now you can be much more prescriptive about how you produce and deliver nitrogen to the plant using gene editing and using strain engineering.
So if there's nitrogen in the air and there's nitrogen in the soil, how do these microbes make that available? And commercially, what have you been able with this living organism to replace or provide?
Yeah, so to answer your first question around nitrogen in the air and the soil, you're right. 78% of the atmosphere and of the air, even the air that you and I breathe, is nitrogen. That's not the form the plant needs. So when we talk about nitrogen fixation, it's really converting that N2 into a, you know, form usable by the plant like ammonia. And so that's what the microbe is doing. Now, you have to turn it into a product, which is really where you're going with your second part of your question here. And so we started as a liquid product at planting. So think about it as a liquid fertilizer. It goes, and today we still have this formulation, it goes and it's applied in furrow. And it hits that seed when it's being planted in furrow. You then close the row, and those microbes have made contact with that seed. And as I mentioned earlier, plant grows, root system gets established. That's the microbe's natural home. They live on that root system and help the plant through its life that growing season. We then came out with our second formulation, which is a seed treatment. And our seed treatment gets deployed through seed dealerships. In the independent seed model, it gets deployed through ag retail. And then we're excited here just in the next few days, a very large seed and seed treatment partner on the enterprise side working with our products as a part of their seed treatment packages. That microbe is going on seed prior to planting. So now think about an invisible layer of these microbes on that seed. So as soon as that seed is planted, whatever seed you plant, maybe you're, you know, planting Legacy Monsanto or Bayer brands or Corteva brands or Bex or, you know, Syngenta seeds, doesn't matter. They can all have this microbe on it, and then that microbe gets to work on behalf of the plant. And today it provides roughly 20-25% of that plant's nitrogen need. So our development pipeline is not only continuing to expand formulations like we did with On Seed, coming out with a dry formulation or other formulations to deliver these products, but also improving that rate and timing of nitrogen fixation, because it isn't just rate, right? We need to place nitrogen when the plant needs it. Right now, we're great, V6, V4, all the way out through tassel. If we can solve the nitrogen source through grain fill, which is sort of the holy grail in nitrogen, then you fundamentally change how growers apply and deliver source placement and timing. You know, three of the four R's are key in that respect in terms of late season nitrogen. So that's really what we're focused on.
There is a growing voice that suggests that the practices farmers are using today with chemical fertilizers, with pesticides, are not environmentally sensitive, and they challenge the practices that we have today. First question for mm-hmm. you, do you see that farmers are degrading soil, degrading the environment by the way they're farming today? And what would happen if we took away some of those chemistries and forced farmers to go back into tillage and some practices in agriculture that we were using a couple of decades ago?
Yeah, that's not a fair assessment. I think in this case, farmers are the heroes, right? They're the ones feeding the world. And if you look at, we'll pick on chemistry because it's more advanced in crop protection than fertilizer. As I mentioned, we're at sort of the tip of the spear here on the fertilizer change cycle. But using plant genetics and new technologies, a farmer today uses 86% less chemical load when you look at weight of active ingredients than 40 years ago. That's amazing. 86% less chemical. Now, is it perfect? No, absolutely not. But farmers use the technology that's available to them. So the impetus is on all of us. Your question around policymakers and regulators, around technology companies, around investors. We have got to figure out a way to continue to serve the American farmer to both reduce costs, improve sustainability, and improve output. If we don't do that, nothing else matters. Our business, we've only been commercial for 5 years. We've gone from zero to several million acres. There is no doubt the American farmer wants to use more sustainable, higher producing technology. When I sit down with our customers, we have thousands of customers, tens of thousands of people have used this product. I sit down with them and they say, you know what, Chris, I need you to continue to help me think differently about my farm. How should I build my crop nutrition plan? How should I use fertilizer differently? How does it integrate with my equipment, with my seed choice, my decision around crop protection, soil health? What can I measure? They think about these things holistically. For someone to have a view that the American farmer is not the solution to this overall equation is just it's a view from someone not paying attention. That's a naive view because it's a very hard business, as you know, to be a farmer. It's extremely capital intense. You take a massive amount of risk, and it's a pretty low margin business. And the joy that they get to feed the world is amazing. The credit that they get to feed the world is also amazing, unfortunately, the other way. People don't realize that they're really the lifeblood. These farmers are the lifeblood of what feeds and fuels our world. If you don't want food and you don't want fuel, you won't be around very long. And so we have got to continue to support farmers as the heroes here, and the impetus is on all of us to serve them with better technology to continue to drive their business and sustainability and economic outcomes. That is something that I have no patience for folks that don't see that or that don't see the value that a farmer brings.
Do you see a day that the product that you're working on here could have an even greater role in the feeding of crops?
Yes. Every day, that's the case. We continue to take up fixation. We continue to expand formulations and expand our partnerships, bringing other products, not just ours, to solve some of these challenges for farmers. So every day, we are chipping away at that block to figure out how can we deliver more value? How can we continue to deliver more nutrient in a more economic way and in a more sustainable way? No doubt, that happens every single day. It's what drives all of us at Pivot, and I know a number of our partners as well. Now, I think there will be a day where products like ours could be the majority or the largest pillar of a crop nutrition program. Do I think there's a point where they're going to be everything to everyone all at once? No. Won't be in my life, probably not in my kids' life. Maybe at some point someone will discover the next, you know, whiz-bang thing that does everything for everybody all at once, and that'll be awesome, but you know, look, I say it's simply, you know, you don't use one source of nitrogen today. You don't use one macro. You don't use one micro. You don't use one piece of equipment. You know, we don't do one of anything. We live in a biologic world in agriculture. You've got to use all the tools at your disposal. Our focus is continuing to deliver novel crop nutrition solutions and working with partners like fert companies, fertilizer companies, retailers, seed companies, seed care companies, to deliver it for our farmers. And we'll continue to drive more value, increasing fixation rate, lowering cost, and bringing new revenue opportunities from sustainability and new commodity market potential, which we do today. Roughly a third of our customers get paid extra for their crop because they're growing it more sustainably, and that's what we're focused on.
I don't want to lead you with this question, but I want to ask and hit me objectively. Chris, do you see a day where a farmer, because of gene editing, would be able to choose the traits of a crop that they need in the soil and above the soil, but also be making choices for the microbes that they attach to the seed that will live beneath the surface of the soil for the life of the plant?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned before, you know, we'll use our technology and as an example. We feed on the root exudates of a corn plant or cotton or wheat. If I was developing and could snap my fingers and get a new crop type out there, I would have a plant that was releasing more sugar, more energy source for our microbe through those exudates without impacting yield or plant fitness. If I could do that, I could ensure I can embed more microbes, that I could add new complementary technologies, whether that's on seed, whether those are liquid products that are applied, or whether those are ways to improve soil health. That plant's ability to feed, as you identified before that rhizosphere, can do a lot of magical things for that plant and for that farmer to continue to reduce their cost of production and improve their output. So I absolutely think there's a number of great projects that we think impact this. It's folks focused on plants that are more efficient uptakers of nutrients, or more efficient uptakers, in this case, the water happens to move with nutrient mobilization, so you get a double benefit there. Being able to use technology to continue to evolve our farm management practices and our input choices is something that growers have done forever, and they'll always do. It's why I go back to the impetus is on us. We've got to make the menu of options easier to understand and more robust, because growers will use the technology. They always have and they always will. We've got to bring it to them in the best way and in the cheapest, most productive way possible.
Is there any way Washington could incentivize producers to embrace and to test these new technologies, to encourage their effort towards sustainability?
Yes, there's a number of ways, and it can start at the federal level with programs like biofuels or sustainable fuels programs. It can start at the regional level by updating some of the practice standards and the resources that are out in rural America. NRCS and others do a fantastic job. How do we get them more programs, more technologies to make better recommendations for customers? And then we're even working at the state level with a number of states that are trying to incent behavior for growers to do the right thing, for the growers ultimately to take more risk in just changing behavior, right? This is a generational business. If your father or mother did something and then you do it and someone asks you to do something new, there's a resistance to change. It's a natural human instinct. And so, you know, you have to help them along that journey in terms of taking new risk or making new changes. And growers do it. They do it naturally. But if you want to accelerate that, certainly policy can really help reducing risk and adding incentive. And so you can think about it twofold. I can help manage your downside risk and incent somebody to do something if you're a grower. I can pay you more for your crop. I can open up new markets, which you always love in the commodity market. Anytime there's another buyer for a commodity product is a good day. And we can do that. We can do that in the U.S. I would expand it and say our position needs to be much more open in terms of global trade, because the more buyers of U.S.-grown commodities, the better it is for the U.S. farmer. And so I think both at the state level, the regional level, and at the national level, we can continue to work together to incent the behavior and the outcomes. But the key there is working together, and that inherently is the challenge, and we're trying to do our part to bring both private partners as well as some of our state and federal partners or friends to try to bring everybody together here, because this is too big a challenge to solve on our own. So we got to figure out how to work together.
Well, Chris Abbott, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us and talk about the exciting things that are happening with Pivot Bio. We look forward to the future and what research is going to provide with regard to sustainable tools for producers. Chris, thanks for being here today. This is Open Mic, and you know you've got the last word.
No, I appreciate you having me. These have been fantastic questions. My commitment to our industry remains the same. We need to continue to deliver world-class products with world-class value for our customers. As a growth business, I know, you know, we haven't been perfect, but our catalytic position that we serve today is to try to bring folks together to continue to learn what we've done well, what we could do better, and ways that we serve our customers. I feel very strongly that the grower is at the center of these solutions. The grower is the hero, as we say, in our company, and it's on all of us to serve them together. The only way we're going to do that is by bringing the private industry, capital providers and investors, technology companies and regulators together. So we've got to figure out how to get that weave working more closely together to serve the farmer, because they're an amazing force for change and a force for good. And so I want to thank our customers. I want to thank our partners, that have been with us the last few years. I learn more with them and get some of our best ideas come directly from our customers and our growers. And so I thank them for their support, their feedback, both good and bad. And I hope that all of us can continue to work together to serve them in a much bigger way. So thank you for the questions and thanks for having me.
Our thanks to Chris Abbott, CEO of Pivot Bio, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced feed ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.